Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on story time when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. Now, you know, that's really true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries, but out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of that gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper versus the gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good reason. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin is absolutely necessary for us to use and to deal in order for us to establish our property rights and pay our debts at law. Well, our Congress and our politicians didn't take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people to the first plank, to the Communist Manifesto, that they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to pay their debts at law and reduce them to discharges in equity. So if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then you and I must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation. It is the holy grail of all of our liberties, and it's the foundation of Anglo-Saxon administration. So let me show you how to do just that in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. If you'd like to learn more, get more information about our private business school, then call and order our free general law CD package first. Now, that's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. Maybe this isn't for you. But it's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative. It's entertaining. It's educational. And it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, when we're talking about income, we talk about the Department of Labor, don't we? You know, the Department of Labor keeps a record of all income groups and social strata. So let me tell you the Department of Labor story. They did a survey. They did a research project one time in Hartford, Connecticut. Now, Hartford, Connecticut, you know, isn't down in the slums, you know, like Harlem is in New York. I mean, you know, when you go to Hartford, Connecticut, you know, you're up there with the upper crust. You're in there with the top 400. So in Hartford, Connecticut, they went to a neighborhood that averaged $100,000 of annual net income per year. So they went to the zip code where the IRS has your name and address in Hartford, Connecticut, where most of the people, you know, not everybody, but most of the people in the community are making $100,000 a year or more, which put them into the top 5% of income earners in the nation. So if you're a little guy driving truck, or if you're just a little guy that's plumber, or carpenter, electrician, you know, or housewife, you know, you think to yourself, wow, boy, would I like to be in the top 400 making $100,000 a year. Now, they analyzed these people that were making $100,000 a year to see, you know, how do they spend their money? When you're making $100,000 a year, kids, you got to be a lawyer or a doctor or a real estate broker, or you've got to be a top-notch salesman. You've got to be in some kind of a profession, or you've got to be in some kind of a business. You could be in a small business, you know, selling hotcakes out of Denny's and make $100,000 a year. But you're going to be a small businessman. You're not going to be a wage earner. You're not a factory worker. You're not some guy, you know, that's down here pushing a broom on the streets and sweeping the streets and cleaning up the gutters, or working in the high school as a janitor or something like that, making $100,000 a year. So you got to be somebody. You know, I could have been somebody. Remember old Marlon Brando? All right, so if you want to be a somebody, you know, maybe we should just move to Hartford, Connecticut, where everybody is in the top 400, making $100,000 a year. But anyway, they took the average family with an income of $100,000 and the top 5% of income earners in the nation, and they found that this family is made up of college-educated professionals such as doctors, dentists, lawyers, insurance brokers, and real estate agents or brokers. All right, so we're in the group of people here that have made it and made it big because they've got a degree from college. All except for Bill Gates. My God, if Bill Gates had not dropped out of college, can you imagine where he would be today? Yes. Yes, if Bill Gates had not dropped out of college, and if he had stuck with it, if he hadn't surrendered to the wiles of the world and the pleasures of Egypt, he could have gotten a degree and been an engineer. He could have been an electrical engineer. He could have been somebody working for IBM or Cisco Systems today, making $150,000 a year. But on average, these people live in a $237,000 house, and then they drive one $40,000 car, although they own and maintain, on average, three cars. Now, their expenses, on average, look like this. Their income taxes, state, federal, and city, you know, a lot of cities have income tax, like San Francisco, California. Now, income taxes, state, federal, and city taxes, that's 20% for the federal, 5%, 3 to 5% for the state, and about 1% for the city. You add them all up, you know, and you got about 24% income tax that they're paying. Now, you may be a plumber living, you know, in a city like this, and maybe you're paying more than 24% in state, local, and federal taxes. But, you know, if you're in the top 400, you pay, on average, 24%. Now, their property taxes averaged $3,000 a year. That was 3%. Their house payments were $1,711 a month, which averaged about 20% with interest. Then, of course, they've got utilities. That's the telephone, the gas, water, electric, and so on. That's 3%, $3,000 a year. Then they have insurance. They have life insurance, health insurance, fire insurance, auto insurance, and homeowners insurance. And some of them have more than that. And that takes 6%, $6,000 a year, to pay all those insurance premiums to keep them safe and comfy. Then there's entertainment. God love entertainment, including eating out, which takes 5%. Then they have groceries and their household expenses in an upscale household, which takes 7%. Then, they have interest payments on their credit cards, autos, and other finance charges, excluding interest on their mortgage. So we're not counting the interest on their house mortgage. That was already figured in at 20%. Now, you know, you got people out here today with these adjustable rate mortgages, and you got mom and dad both working, and sometimes they're paying up to 50% of their income in mortgage payments. I remember when I was a kid, they recommended not over 25%. If you're upscale, you're averaging about 20%. So they keep it down below the 25% recommended, way, way below the 50% that, you know, a lot of you average people out there with mom and dad both working, struggling here to make ends meet and pay the expenses and keep the kids in school, you know, and off the streets and out of the pool halls. All right, now that totals 83%. If you take the fixed expenses of the wealthy classes of America, now not the super wealthy, you know, I'm not talking about Ken Lay over here at Enron, I'm just talking about, you know, your doctor, your dentist, and so on. These guys spend 83% or $83,000 out of their $100,000, which gives them $17,000, 17% of their income as mad money. Now, today, this is a few years back, see, but today, you know, people, and the housing bubble has run the price of houses way up, you know, over the last 5, 6, 7 years, you know, I think this is taken back about 2000, something like that. And inflation's run prices up by 30%. One of these days we'll hit hyperinflation and then these numbers over. So I like to hang a label on this. This is in the year 2000, you know, when we were at a stabler level of income and expenses and inflation. So back in 2000. Now, let's contrast that, shall we? I mean, this is the American dream. This is what all of you people lust and covet after. I want to make $100,000 a year. When you talk to people and you say, are you satisfied with your job? About half the people in the country say yes, and half the people say no. That's about 50-50 split. Half the people are not satisfied with their job. And if you ask them, what is it about your job, if you're in that 50% that's dissatisfied, I'm not being paid enough. I don't know how much enough is, but whatever it is, half the people in the country believe that they're not getting paid enough. And so they want more money. They want more income. Now, of course, when you get more money and more income, well, then the heavy progressive income tax of plank number 2 of our Communist Manifesto, which all of us Americans practice, in spite of all of our protestations to the contrary, for all you practicing communists out there that are practicing the second plank. You know, if you're making $50,000 a year and you say, well, that's not enough, I need more, well, then go out and work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year. Now, it breaks down like this. If you're making $50,000 a year, the government's taking $30,000 and leaving you with $20,000. But if you work twice as hard and produced $100,000, would the government then take $60,000 and leave you with $40,000? No. The heavy progressive income tax kicks in, and then the government takes 74% and leaves you with $26,000. You know, you get to work twice as hard, and you get to produce twice as much and make 8% more. I mean, that's the way the numbering system works. Communists count funny, don't they? Well, you know, compared to when I went to school, we used to count a little differently than we do today. So, after tax, after expenses, after mortgage payments, after insurance, entertainment, groceries, and interest payments on the credit cards, the upper crust, that is the guys that are in the top 5% of income earners, they've got $17,000, 17% called mad money. Hell, they could take a carnival cruise, for crying out loud. All right, so if we looked at the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, they mandate a different lifestyle. Parallel to, but different from the American dream. For instance, if you were looking at tithes and holy day offerings, instead of 24%, you'd be paying 15%. Yeah, that's right. So you would save about 9 percentage points on average if you were a $100,000 guy, and instead of paying income tax, Social Security, and these other, let's see, there's 14, other 12 taxes, there's 14 taxes to the government, you'd just be paying tithes and holy day offerings. That's three tithes and holy day offerings. That would take 15%. All right, now your property taxes here, you know, where I'm at, is quite a few acres. You know, I've got a farm here, and there's quite a few acres. Well, my property tax here is about $600 a year. Yeah, it takes about 1.5% of my adjusted income to pay my property taxes. Now, house payments, I live a different lifestyle, so I'm free and clear, so I don't make any house payments. It's not good business, and it's a bad policy. Okay, car payments. I don't have a single $40,000 car. I got to confess to you that I don't have any $40,000 cars, but I do have three. I got three. So I'm up there with the guy that makes $100,000 because on average he has three cars, but one of his cars is a $40,000 car. And I do not have a $40,000 car. So, you know, the guy driving around in his Lexus, you know, he's better off, I guess, than I am. Because I just have a GMC. Okay, now, the car payments that he's making over here on these $40,000 Lexuses and all, remember, that takes some of his income, his cars and one thing and another, interest payments, credit cards, auto and other finance charges, takes 15%. Mine takes zero. Zero, zero. I just wanted to let you know I don't pay anything on car payments because I don't have any car payments. I buy and pay for what I drive. Okay, utilities. Boy, this is a shocker. My utilities here run $800 a month. That's $9,600 a year. When you look at utilities over here, living in Hartford, Connecticut, it's only 3%. I pay 24%. Oh my God. Yeah, out here in the country, it costs more for your water and electric, telephone, telegraph, telewoman. I mean, it just costs more. Now, there's interest payments. I don't pay any interest payments because that violates the Mosaic law. And then we have entertainment, such as Sabbaths and holy days. Okay. Well, the Sabbaths and holy days is 10%. I pay a 10% tithe. It goes into a coffee can because I don't have a checking account. And so us hillbillies that have no checking accounts have to keep our money someplace, so we keep it in a coffee can. And I save 10% of everything I make, and I put it in a coffee can, and I use it for Sabbaths and entertainment. Entertainment. Whole, you know, things like carnival cruises and things like that. And then there's insurance. I don't have any insurance at all. None, zero, zilch, zippo. That's because we practice strict liability. Now, if you take a look at how much we pay, tithes and holy day offerings, the equivalent of taxes, 15%, property taxes, 1.5%, utilities, 24%, and then entertainment, 10%, and you add all of that up, in the country, my fixed expenses, remember that telephone, electric, water, gas, property taxes, are higher than my city cousin. I pay $9,600 a year versus $6,000 in Hartford, Connecticut. However, my pay cash, no interest lifestyle allows me to live in a 7,000 square foot house, drive three vehicles, although none of them are worth $40,000. In fact, all three of them together aren't worth $40,000. And then I eat better than you people in the city. You know, I drink raw milk. And furthermore, I have a gallon of cream in my refrigerator. So just ask yourself, how much cream do you have in yours? In order for me to end up with $17,000 in disposable income, I have to earn $40,000 a year, or it's equivalent to live the $100,000 lifestyle. You got that, boys and girls? All right. So let me break it down for you in easy-to-understand lingo. If I lived in Hartford, Connecticut, as an insurance broker, real estate broker, or some profession. I'd have to make $100,000 a year to net $17,000 so that I'd have $17,000 worth of wild mad money to spend on the Carnival cruise and down at Flo's whorehouse. Living here in the country, practicing the law of Moses, the law of God, you know, practicing the Ten Commandments and tithing instead of paying the income tax and so on, I only have to make $40,000. And I will net $17,000 to spend on wild March hares. So maybe, just maybe, God's lifestyle and the Ten Commandments wasn't as bad as we all imagined it to be when we left the farm and moved to the city so that we could cut a fat hog in the back. Now, while we're talking about money and buying and standards of living and all, most people like to buy a house. In fact, they tell us, the government does, and if you can't trust your government, who can you trust? Our government tells us that the single biggest investment that you and I, the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives of the nation, are likely to buy is our home. Well, there could be some other things that those in the $100,000 tax bracket or the $100,000 lifestyle might prize higher than their homes, like stocks and bonds and other things. And I got to tell you a story here about I had a Jew in here the other day. I couldn't believe it. Oh, not that he was a Jew. Those guys are about as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. But a Jew came into class the other day, and he had a problem. He had a bad problem. And I said, well, what's your bad problem? He said, I have some money in an out-of-country account. And I said, well, that doesn't sound like a problem to me. And he said, oh, you don't understand. You see, I made this money in stocks. And I'm telling you, boys and girls, if I'd had false teeth, that had just fallen right out of my mouth. I have been in the business world since 1950 when I started delivering newspapers for the Humboldt Standard. I have talked to literally thousands of people in my life. I never met anybody, living or dead, that ever made money in stocks. Oh, I've heard stories. You know, I hear stories on Katie Couric and Brian Williams about how to invest for the long term in stocks and how the stock market always goes up and nobody ever loses money in stocks that invest for the long term. And I did the arithmetic, you know, on the Dow Jones stocks, the blue chips and all of that. I've looked at them hard, boys and girls, for years and years. I've interviewed people, I've talked to people. I have never, ever, ever talked to anybody, live and direct, a living, breathing human being, who has ever invested his money in the stock market and stocks that ever made a dime. Not one. Never. Nada. Zero. Zilch. But the other day I met one. Came right into my class. Sat right there at the table. Just as big and bold as you please. And I mean, he didn't make just a little bit. I mean, he scored, and he scored, and he scored, and then he scored on him again. I could hardly believe it was like picking six numbers in the lottery. I mean, this guy hit the lottery. And now he's got so damn much money, he doesn't know what the hell to do with it. And so I just thought I'd pass that one on to you, because it doesn't happen very often. You know, once in a while, but not very often. Most of us, you know, we're normal, everyday garden variety, Jack or Joe Sixpacks. And we buy a house, and when we buy a house, we expect to make a profit on it. And we have been told since we were little kids, you know, it doesn't make any difference whether you're a big kid now or a little kid, you have heard that you can't lose money in real estate. That if you're going to make money in life, it's going to be in real estate. It's going to be in your home. Everybody buys a home. Everybody dreams of home ownership. It's the American way. So, like stocks, you know, I looked at the Dow Jones Industrial Average from 1960 to 2000. And they averaged a 5% increase. That's 5% per year, compounded for 40 years, and if you take $10,000 and compound it for 40 years at 5%, it's $72,000. It's true. It's honest to God true. If you invested $10,000 in the stocks in 1960, in 2000, when you sold them, you'd have $72,000. But you got to pay 28% capital gain, that's $17,000. You lost 4.7% to inflation for the whole 40-year period, which means that per year you only netted 0.3%. And then you had to pay 28% tax on all of the profits that you made. And so your $10,000 in purchasing power is down to $6,200. You lost $3,800. Now that's stocks. So when this Jew came in here, sat at my table here in the classroom and said he had a real problem because he had made so much money in stocks, I'm telling you, boys and girls, it made me want to sell my home and get into the stock market where I could buy stocks high and then sell higher later on. Most people, you know, buy low and sell lower. I want to buy high and sell higher. And this guy bought low and sold high. Now that's a rare, rare commodity. Now most of us try to make money in houses. So I took a look at houses and I said, well, gee, how much money is there to make in a house? Well, one of the first things that I hear about home ownership is, where would I live if I don't buy a house? Well, I guess you could rent one. I guess you could build one. I guess you could live under a bridge. But anyway, that's not satisfactory for most Americans. And so let's try building our own house. Let's build a $50,000 house that costs $25,000 to build. I'm an old-timey general contractor. I just wanted to let you know that when I sell a house for $50,000, it costs me $25,000 to build it. Yes, sirree, Bob. I keystone my markups. I'm just kind of guessing that most contractors do the same thing. Of course, I may be one of the more selfish, greedy, capitalist pigs that you'll run across, but then I just thought I'd share that one with you. Now, when I build a house, I figure that it costs me one half for labor and one half for materials. So if I keystone a $50,000 house, I must have paid $12,500 for the carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, and $12,500 for the building materials that I bought down at Home Depot or whatever they call that place. And then I build the house and then I sell it. Now, when I sell the house, the bank comes along and they finance it. They're nice guys and they finance it. And they just want 6% for 30 years. Have you ever worked out the numbers on 6% interest for 30 years? Well, I did. It's $62,000. Now, that means that if you buy a $50,000 house and you pay $5,000 down and you finance $45,000, you make 360 payments over 30 years, you're going to buy one house for you and 1.25 houses for the banker. If you pay 8% interest, you will buy one house for you and two houses for the banker. Isn't that just real special? Now, Americans believe in sharing the wealth. So Americans buy houses. They pay 10% down. Well, they used to. Now they don't pay anything down. Then they move into a $450,000 house. And then they have low interest rates until the adjustable rate mortgage kicks in, and then it doubles, and then it doubles again, and then they find themselves out on the street. And that's because most Americans can't count, because most Americans are Christians. And so, in my business experience, I have never met a Jew that couldn't count, and I never met a Christian that could. And the Christians all complain about the Jews owning everything and taking advantage of them just because they can count. And I suspect it's because Christians go to public school. I suspect a lot of Jews go to public school too, but they can overcome it. When they come home after school, I'm sure Daddy sits down and says, "Let me explain to you interest and usury, little children." Christians don't learn that. So now let me carry this to the next step. Now that you know the secrets of the general contractor, and that is, I'm ripping you off by charging you double what it cost me to build the house because I'm a greedy, selfish, capitalist pig, let's take it one step further. and you buy two houses for the banker at the same time that you're buying one for yourself over 30 years. So I hope you build your own home for $25,000. Now, if you did that, if you built your house yourself and you did it for $25,000, that's one house for you and then five more houses for you over the same 30-year period. Now, I know you people are complaining about those capitalist Jewish landlords. But you see, those guys can count. And so they don't pay $50,000 for a house at 8% interest and buy one for themselves and two for the bankers. They go out and build the houses themselves for $25,000. And over the same 30-year period, they build one for themselves and five more for themselves and end up with six houses and rent five of them to you Christians so that you can complain about those capitalist Jews who are taking advantage of you. Now, there's an old secret that I learned from Frank Rocha. Do you remember that? It is, the man who makes $100,000 a year spends it all. And the man that makes $50,000 a year, he spends it all. And the man that makes $25,000 a year, he spends it all. The man that makes $12,500 a year, he spends it all. So the secret in building your own home and developing the capital that you need in order to have the capital to buy the materials, to hire the carpenters, to build the house, is to always save half. And that means you cut your standard of living by 50%. So if you make $20, you live like you were making $10. You know, if you're making $20 an hour, and then you cut your standard of living to the same as you did when you were making $10 an hour. And then if you made $50, you live like you did when you made $25. Stop paying income tax. Stop paying insurance. Stop paying interest. Practice strict liability. Don't pay any usury. Tithe. And in less than 3 years, you will have the cash to build your own home. And in 6 years, you will have enough money to pay retail and have it built for you. So that at the end of 3 to 6 years, you will own your own home, free and clear. And then for the next 24 years, you will be able to profit instead of lose. I know this is a wild new concept, but it's the way our forefathers lived in 1860, 1880, 1900, 1920. That's the way they lived. And they owned their homes free and clear. It wasn't until we went to college and got real smart that we created a Federal Reserve Bank. You know, it wasn't until we went to college and got real smart and learned how to leverage and make all that money in the stock market by investing $10,000 in stocks in 1950 and losing $3,800 of it and purchasing power by 2000. Not until we went to college and got letters after our names did we become so poor. Because in 1900, America was the wealthiest, most powerful, most prosperous nation in the world. And today, we are the world's number one debtor nation, children. Yeah, I'm a little over time for our halfway break. Stand by, and let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we are open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school website, or the Law Hour website, is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station, but I think they probably should. But they don't, necessarily. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about economics here. We'll call this Economics 101. Remember that house that you're going to build? Oh, excuse me. Americans don't build houses. Americans buy turnkey houses. That's a house that's already got the key in the door ready to go. And we pay little or nothing down, and we start making payments on this thing, and we pay 6, 7, 8, 9, oh, shuck, sometimes 10% interest for 30 years. And this is called geometric progression. We have a rule called the Rule of 72. Now, sharpen your pencils on both ends here, children. Both ends. That's so you don't miss anything. Let me show you something. Take 72. Punch it into your sharp EL1197G3. And then divide it by the interest rate that you are paying on your house, your home payment right now. You might not even know what it is. But if you call the bank, they can tell you, because many of you probably could not find it in your mortgage papers, probably. But the last time I took a look the other day, interest rates were just up over 7%. So I'm just going to punch in 7. So we divide it by 7. 72 divided by 7, I get an answer of 10.28. That's about 10.3. That's about 10 and a third. A third of 12 is 4. So about every 10 years and 4 months, it doubles. 10 years and 4 months. In round numbers. If you're paying 7.2% interest on your home mortgage, every 10 years it doubles. What that means is this. You sign a contract to buy a house. It doesn't make any difference what the price of the house is. If the interest rate on the house is 7.2%, it doubles every 10 years. And that means that in a 30-year mortgage, it doubles at the end of 10 years, it doubles at the end of 20 years, and it doubles at the end of 30 years. So you're going to buy 3 houses, 1 house for you and 2 for the banker. Is that really what you set out to do? Now, I would submit that you've got to be rich or a drunken sailor to sign that kind of a deal. I took a look at the numbers and I came to the conclusion that I didn't want to buy 3 houses. I only want to buy 1. I don't want to buy 1 for me and 2 for you. I just want to buy 1 for me and to hell with you. Now, that's what I think. That's because I'm selfish. I'm only thinking about me. And the bankers will have to think about themselves. Now, Americans don't think about the numbers, and that's because they go to public school. And when they go to public school, they get dumbed down. They can't count. The little Jewish kid over here, he goes to a little Jewish school. And in the little Jewish school, they teach those Jewish kids how to count. And the Jew then ends up owning your mortgage. And that's why you're complaining about him. Now, if you got a pen and paper out in front of you, let me show you what happens when you buy a house. So I just went back to 1955, and we're going to buy a $50,000 house. Now, 1955, a $50,000 house is one god-awful splashy house. So we'll go ahead and buy it. Doesn't make any difference whether it's 5 or 50. The percentages work out the same. So in the year 1955, the interest rate is 6%. So you write 1 to 14 down here, and the purchasing price of the house is $50,000. So number 1, $50,000 purchasing price. Number 2, 1955 is the year. Number 3, the interest rate is 6%. very reasonable 6% interest rate. Your monthly payments are $300 a month. The down payment is $5,000. So, number one, purchasing price. Number two is the year, 1955. Number three is the interest rate, 6%. Number four are the monthly payments, $300 a month. Now, take number five, the down payment, $5,000, 10% down. Now, number six, the total interest over 30 years will be $62,100. $62,000, that's the interest bill. So you're going to borrow $45,000, you're going to pay back $45,000 in principal, and you're going to pay $62,100 in interest at 6%. Now, isn't that just real special? The amount financed is $45,000, that's number seven, and number eight is the principal payments per month. Okay, so here you're making your first payment on your house, $300. $125 goes to principal, and the balance, $175, goes to interest. You pay more money in interest than you do in principal on the house. Now, when I suggest to people that they buy and pay cash for a house, they look at me and say, oh my God, I couldn't do that because I don't have $50,000. Okay, you don't need $50,000 to build a house. And let me ask you this. If you don't have the money to build a house today, where did your great-granddaddy get the money to build his house back in 1905 when he bought it and paid cash? I worked for a guy one time, and his name was Russell Harvey. In 1940, old Russell Harvey bought and paid cash $3,000 and built a three-bedroom, two-bath house on South F Street in Eureka, California. Where did Mr. Harvey get the $3,000 to build the house and pay the carpenter $1 an hour? Hey, kids, you know there was a time in America when we could play basketball. Yeah, that's true. White men could play basketball at one time. There was a time in America when a white man could cut a head of lettuce and could put a bale of hay in the barn. I concede we can't do it anymore, but I want to tell you that there was a time when we could. All right, number eight, your principal payments per month, $125. Got that down? All right, number nine, average monthly payments are $297 a month. I rounded off to 300, remember that? But your actual payments are $297. Now, your taxes per month are $50, $600 a year. Upkeep on the house, $50 a month, $600 a year. And insurance per month, $50 per month, $600 a year. That's number 10, 11, and 12. There's a brokerage fee, 5%. That's $15,000. Well, excuse me, 5% of $50,000, $2,500. And then we've got the points, the mortgage, the insurance, the title search, the closing costs for 30 years. And that's another $5,000. All right, now here's the costs on that house. If you add all of that up, that is the brokerage. Now, I said $5,000 when you bought in, but when you sold the house on the way out. See, what we're going to do is we're going to buy a $50,000 house. And then we're going to make all these payments on it. You know, the interest rate, the monthly payments, the down payment, the total interest, the finance, the principal payments, the taxes, the upkeep, the insurance, the brokerage. When you buy the house at $50,000, you pay $2,500, but when you sell it for $250,000, which was the average price, it was the sale price of the house after 30 years, you made a horrific profit. Well, to a Christian, it's a horrific profit. To a Jew, he shakes his head and says, them Christians can't count. And I'm going to show you that here in a second. Over a period of 30 years, the total cost is $186,100. I've already added that up for you, so if you just wanted to figure it out, you've got 14 costs in home ownership. 14. Most people, all they can think about is the monthly payment, and then what else? Taxes, okay, that's two. What else? And most people start stuttering. There's upkeep. Do you know that the roof on your house when you buy it will not last for 30 years? Do you know that the dishwasher that you have in the kitchen when you buy that new house will not be the same dishwasher 30 years from now? Do you know the washer and dryer that the contractor threw in to get you to sign? It won't last 30 years. Well, unless it's a Maytag. That might last 30 years. Yes, boys and girls, at the end of 20 years, you will need a new roof on that house, and that's going to cost you $5,000. Yes, boys and girls, the carpet will not last for 30 years, and when you recarpet your house, that'll be another $5,000. Yes, boys and girls, the drapes, the appliances, and all of the furnishings, well, except for the antiques that you got from Aunt Bessie, they won't last for 30 years either, because the cheap chipboard furniture that you bought down at Walmart wears out after about 5 or 10 years, and you got to keep replacing it. And all of these are called costs. It's the cost of goods sold. And when you add them all up, it's $186,100. All right. Now remember, the sale price then in 1985, 30 years later, was $250,000. So if we take our cost of goods sold, $186,100, and we subtract it from $250,000, we make a gross profit for 30 years of $63,900. Oh my God, only in America could you do such a thing. We buy a home. We buy a house. We live in that sucker for 30 years and sell it for more money than we paid for it. Look at the profit we made. Christians, look at the profit. All right, your total income per year, that is, the total amount of money that you made on your investment every year, is $2,130. Your capital gain tax is $17,892. That's 28% of the $63,900 profit that you made. But your adjusted net profit is $46,008. Well, even after you've paid your capital gain tax, you made $46,000. Now remember, you paid $50,000 for the house back in 1955. You kept the house for 30 years, lived in it, put a new roof on it, remember, at 20 years, put all new appliances in it. You spent $186,100. You netted $63,900, paid your capital gain tax, and now you've got $46,000 in your grubby little hands. Net, net, net. How much profit did you make on that transaction? Well, remember, you paid $5,000 down. Remember that? Remember the $5,000 you paid down? Well, back in 1955, how many Chevrolet automobiles could you have bought with that $5,000 down payment? I know most of you people are sitting there scratching your heads, wishing that you were on Jeopardy, because you know the answer is 2. Yes, it's true. You could buy 2 Chevrolet Bel Air 6-cylinder Chevrolet automobiles for about $2,500 each, which would have equaled your down payment. Now, remember, in 1956, you had to make payments on the house of $300 a month for 12 months. $300 a month times 12 is $3,600. So how many 1956 automobiles could you have bought for $3,600? Here we go with Jeopardy again. One. You could have bought 1 Buick automobile in 1956 for $3,600 at the end of the year, paying cash, and buying the 1956 model rather than the 1957 that came out in October. Remember? All right. 1957 came along. How many 1957 automobiles could you buy for your $3,600? And the answer is 1 1957 Oldsmobile. Now, remember that for 30 years, you paid $300 a month, $3,600. Remember that? Well, you could have bought 1 automobile every year during that period of time. So the total number of automobiles that you could have bought for the same amount of money that you paid for the house was 30 automobiles plus the two 1955 Chevrolets. Now here's what the net is. If you take the annual payments for the year, that is $3,600 a year, times 26, the net loss over 30 years amounts to $92,664. Can you hear the long pregnant pause? I said, when you bought a house for $50,000 in 1955, made your payments faithfully at 6% interest for 360 payments, you lost $92,664 in purchasing power. It's called the American Dream. It's the biggest investment that Americans make. It's in their homes, that every American believes is a piggy bank that he can take and cash in so that he can go down to Walmart and spend it to stimulate the economy. God bless you Christians. Stimulating the economy. Now that's because most Americans can't count. They can't do the arithmetic. The average inflation rate, children, from 1960 to 2000 was 4.7% a year. We could round that off to 5% because we have another 30% loss in our purchasing power from 2000 to 2006 in 6 years. 30%. That loss in purchasing power is compounded annually, just like we do when we did the stock program. You invest $10,000 in stocks at 5% compounded using the rule of 72, you net $72,000. That's true. But the purchasing power is less. For instance, it now costs you more than double what it cost you in 1985 to buy the same goods. You walk in, you buy a head of lettuce today, it costs you double what it cost in 1985. More than double. In fact, just in the last year, the price of wheat's gone up 110%. The price of corn is up about 200%. Now, what's going on here is called inflation, and it's a hidden tax. It's one of the cost of goods sold. The break-even point on a house at 6% interest is 5 years. If you buy a house this year and sell it next year for a profit, you probably have a real genuine profit. If you buy a house and sell it within 5 years and you have a profit, you may actually have a real, adjusted for inflation, honest to God, truly earned profit. But if you buy a house and you pay interest on it for 30 years, I'll guarantee you, you've got a net loss. Net loss in your purchasing power. It is true that in absolute dollars, you've got more dollars. But it is not true that the absolute dollars in 2007 buy as much as the same dollar did in 1960. So you were paying 1960, 61, 62, 65, 70, 75, 80, and 83 dollars. And those dollars in those years represented 100%. Today they don't. And that represents loss. Can you say loss, boys and girls? Now that's business. Now remember, in business, there are businessmen and there are business boys. Most Americans that I run across are business boys. They can't count, can't do their percentages. They think they're making a profit when they're losing their hind ends. America used to be the wealthiest, most powerful, prosperous nation in the world in 1900. Today, we have public debt, totaling $59 trillion. All of the plant and equipment in the country is only worth $45 trillion. you know, adjusted for inflation, take off all the fluff and the crap. If you took everything in the country and sold it in a yard sale in the morning, you couldn't get as much as the public debt. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. If you add in all the mortgages, and you add in all of your car payments, and you add in all of your big screen TVs and your credit cards and the national debt and all the debts that we Americans have, it's $149 trillion. That's how much you owe, $149 trillion. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because you're the underwriters and the marine surety underwriters of all of the bank and the credit institutions' debts, and they call those derivatives. And there's $400 trillion worth of derivatives out there that you're the surety underwriter of, with joint and several liability. Joint and several liability. That's a legal term. What that means is you're one of 300 million Americans, and you have a joint liability of $149 trillion plus $400 trillion. And you owe all that money as your prorated share of one out of 300 million Americans. But if the other 299,999,999 Americans do not pay, you owe the whole bill all by yourself. That's what a maritime surety underwriter is. Now, can you boys and girls figure out why God told you not to use unjust weights and balances, pay your tithes, to hell with taxes and Social Security, practice strict liability, practice the Ten Commandments, and to hell with the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto? Yes, sir, boys and girls. You may think that you're very, very rich, and all of you people are going to have an opportunity to see just how rich you're going to be. I would predict that within the next 5 years, every American family is going to be a multi-millionaire. I mean, you people are going to have more money than you're going to know what to do with. You're going to have money that if you convert it into Federal Reserve notes, you'll need wheelbarrows to haul it around in. You're going to have millions and millions and billions of dollars. That's the good news. The bad news is all that money won't buy a loaf of bread. Because in Zimbabwe today, the price of gasoline is $1.2 million a gallon. And in 1980, the Zimbabwe dollar was equal to the U.S. dollar. Welcome to the world of hyperinflation. Can you say hyperinflation, boys and girls? Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there. And let me remind you then that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package for your listening entertainment. If you'd like to order one, just call us here at the Law School. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.